It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. The Founding Fathers, they are on our money, etched in marble in our nation's capital, and so first in the hearts of many that their words are considered sacred and cited by politicians alongside Scripture. Often in today's political discourse, consideration of complex issues is framed by asking, what would the founders do? David Sahat teaches history at Georgia State University. In his book, The Jefferson Rule, How the Founding Fathers Became Infallible and Our Politics Inflexible, Sahat argues that going back to the founders is detrimental to making our government work and is a practice that doesn't even reflect the views of the men who founded the United States. And we welcome David Sahat to the program. Professor Sahat, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
In the instance of 21st century issues, where the world is just so different from what the Founding Fathers experienced, we still depend on an 18th century constitution to frame things. Is there any way to even know what the founders would do?
No, I don't think so. Because even if you go back to the 18th century, they disagreed vehemently on all the issues that were facing them. And so, you know, when you take their disagreement and then you add 200 years and then try to figure out what they would do, I think you get nothing. I don't think there's any way to figure that out.
So when we see modern day politicians go to the words of the founders, would have the same arguments been coming up to say, wait a minute, that's not right. You're not interpreting that element of the Constitution or the founders' words correctly. Would have that happened with the same issues in the 18th century?
Yeah, I mean, what happened was, you know, of course they had a revolution, and then they set about developing a constitution. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to figure out who we're talking about when we say the founders, because you can think about it as the revolutionaries who separated from Great Britain, but those split in two. Some of them wanted the constitution and others didn't, and actually, I mean, obviously the ones that wanted it got it, but it was a large percentage of the leaders of the revolution that really rejected the constitution, including people like Jefferson, our third president, James Monroe, our fifth president. So these were important people. And then even after the constitution was drafted, the people who were in support of the constitution, they then split further about the true meaning of the constitution. And so there's this kind of constant battle and division of this era. And we see that, you know, today about the meaning of the Constitution, how to interpret it, how to apply it today. And it's really kind of superimposing those old battles on these new battles. The framers or the founders really don't give us any help in sorting out these issues.
So is the practice of grounding one's modern views through the prism, through what someone would claim to be strict constitutionalism or something, is that a trait of one political party over another, even throughout the last several decades?
It is, I would say, more of a trait of the Republican political party, but it's not at all exclusive to them. I would say that both parties use this appeal to the founders and they invoke the Constitution, but they use it slightly differently. Democrats tend to talk of a living Constitution, and they tend to refer to the founders as people that kind of announced an idea to the world, whether or not they lived up to it or whether or not they even understood it or believed it, for example, like equality in the Declaration of Independence. And then this idea has grown over time. That's the kind of living quality of constitutionalism. Republicans tend to be constitutional originalists, meaning they believe that the framers or the founders had this idea, they put it in the Constitution, and then it's fixed and set. And any kind of departure from that original meaning is a step away from the founders and toward degeneracy. And so you see Republicans appealing to the founders often as a kind of a political weapon to criticize their opponents for departing from the founders' true intentions as conservatives understand them. And you see that sometimes from liberals as well, but not to the same degree.
So when did this practice of citing the founders as infallible to say, well, this was all decided, we figured it all out with this great document, the Constitution, and these vital early amendments. When did that practice begin?
It actually, oddly enough, began with the founders themselves. When the founders began to split apart in the 1790s, they began to fight over a whole bunch of issues like the role of the federal government and how it's supposed to relate to the states and the true meaning of the Constitution. And as they began to fight, and these were really vicious battles, Thomas Jefferson, who became a leader of one faction, he began to refer to the true principles of the Revolution, and he began to say that his other founders were betraying those true principles. So he was, in effect, wrapping himself in the founding and using that self-wrapping to criticize his opponent. And he won. His party won the election of 1800. He totally devastated his opponents. And when that happened, the kind of rhetorical pattern that we see today kind of was written into American political debate. And you see politicians constantly referring to Thomas Jefferson. Once the founders kind of all died off, they then kind of forgot about the division between the founders, and they just started referring to our forefathers or our fathers in order to support their own political positions in the present. And that was well established by the 1820s.
Well, Jefferson comes up so much as someone that's cited in modern times by opposite sides of ideological pursuits. And I think as soon as we put a statue of someone up, there is this idea that they are infallible and knew far more about what the true principles of the country would be than subsequent generations. But the people who have statues in Washington, D.C. fought with one another. And even Washington didn't agree with Jefferson's states' rights and minimalist government ideals all the time. Washington actively worked against Jefferson becoming president.
Yeah, Washington was deeply offended by the activities of Thomas Jefferson, because one of the things about the founders that they did agree on, at least in theory, was that they agreed that political parties were bad, because they thought that political parties substituted the will of a party for the will and the greater good of the people as a whole. And so Washington looked at Jefferson and his claims of being representative of the founding, and he took great offense at him, and he saw him as a kind of a despot or a factionalist, would be the word that they would use in the 18th century. And he believed that if he became president, that would be bad for the country. So he actually held off announcing the departure from public life and his retirement until he could sort of ensure that John Adams won the election. And when he thought he had kind of smoothed everything out, then he announced his retirement, and Jefferson subsequently lost the 1796 presidential election. The other thing about Jefferson is that he disagreed with himself constantly. Some historians call him the American Sphinx, but you know, he would take a position only to contradict it later on. And so Jefferson is this perfect figure to find whatever you want, because he, you know, was opposed to slavery, but he owned slaves. He was a states' rightist, but then once in office, he was a proponent of national power as he understood it. And so he's this kind of deep pool of contradiction, but that's very useful to cherry pick if you want to use something to justify policies in the present.
Well, and this would happen really early. For instance, I think almost anyone in modern times would agree that the Constitution was not this perfect document. The founders were fallible because the country was founded and did not abolish slavery. And it would take a great amount of time before that would be amended in our history. And in trying to expand west and include the territories, during the debate to bring in Missouri as a state, that debate over Jefferson's own words versus his actions came up when it pertained to slavery.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a remarkable debate. This was in 1820, and you know, up to that point, when a territory wanted to become a state, they would make an application to Congress, and Congress would allow them to begin drafting a constitution, and then it was usually pretty seamless. But when Missouri came up, by this point in the North, there had been anti-slavery sentiment developing, and they said Missouri can only come in as a state if they eliminate slavery from the territory and then future state. And slavery had been in Missouri. And the Congress fell to pieces. They debated this for something like 2 years on and off. They were talking about Civil War in the 1820s. And both sides were referencing Thomas Jefferson. And the Southerners were pointing out, you know, he had slaves his entire life. And by this point, he's still alive, remember. And then those in the North were quoting his anti-slavery utterances. And both claimed to be not only representatives of Jeffersonian principles, but because Jefferson was the author of the Declaration of Independence, to be the true heirs of the Declaration of Independence. And they were saying this all in the context of predicting civil war. And so to me, that shows the not only the error, but kind of the dangers of talking about the founding fathers, because on both sides, what they were saying was, I'm the true American and the true patriot, and you are the threat. And any kind of departure from that founding era, as I understand it, is so dangerous that I'm going to go to war with you.
There have been presidents throughout the years that have suggested the founders did not have all the answers, but they are few and far between. What has happened when people have spoken from the office of the presidency or from high political power and say, you know, the founders weren't always right?
You know, it happens so rarely that it takes a special occasion. So it happened after the Civil War. The founders' rhetoric was so devastating in the war that politicians after the war kind of moved away from this rhetoric. And that was a moment when nobody really cared because they saw the sort of the devastating consequences of that rhetoric in Civil War. And in the progressive era in the early 20th century, the attitude toward the founders changed from kind of indifference or avoidance in the aftermath of the Civil War to outright rejection. And the theory was, among these progressives, and who I'm talking about here is Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, they believed that the nation had changed so much over the last, then it would have been 125 or so years, that the Constitution and the American system of government needed to be changed substantially. And so to the extent that the Founding Fathers still mattered, it was a bad thing in their view, because it was trying to apply this 18th century Constitution in what was then a vastly different political context. And so they spoke of kind of overcoming the Founding Fathers, either by amending the Constitution, which they did in four different instances, or simply by ignoring them and assuming a living quality of constitutionalism in the present.
Is there any sophisticated conversation and debate that is happening now when people refer to the founders in this air of infallibility or refer to the Constitution, inferring it's a perfect document? Or is it just designed to shut down debate?
I think it is often designed to shut down debate. You know, particularly in the political arena, there's some sophisticated conversations in the legal arena. There's a guy at Yale, Jack Balkin, who has this notion of framework originalism. And his idea is that the founders created this framework for American politics. And there are aspects of that framework, like the separation of powers or the schedule of the elections, that are, you know, they're still in place. And so to ask about the founders' intentions for those things makes a lot of sense. But in large part, we sort of carry on, and the Supreme Court lays down its opinions, and we move forward. There's a living quality to it. But in politics, often when you hear a politician talking about the founders, it's either because they can't figure out any other way to justify the policy, or their policies are failing, and they want to disguise that in some way. Reagan was a master at this when he cut taxes and promised to balance the budget, and then nevertheless the deficit grew. He began talking about the Founding Fathers to disguise policy failings. Or they use it as a political weapon because they're not in power and they need to criticize their opposition and get in power in some way. But in all cases, it's often intellectually illegitimate.
David Sahat teaches history at Georgia State University, and he is the author of the book The Jefferson Rule, How the Founding Fathers Became Infallible and Our Politics Inflexible. David Sahat, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.